This is an example of speech.
All our history of broiling wars in deep, uneven.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle, blow hard, evergreen topical heatwave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comments section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Elbrow. You can contact me on Twitter at GloatedNemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who's on Twitter at Green_Weird, which is W-Y-R-D. This episode, we have weak thoughts about evangelical Republicans, middling thoughts about Elizabeth Warren's legislative proposals, and closing thoughts about North Korea, and more. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now, for some weak thoughts.
Signed with a shake and a smirk. Centralized states get turned a blind eye. Those who benefit never ask why. Just sit back.
We are here in Weak Thoughts. Just a quick reminder to email the podcast with any questions, complaints, criticisms at tmwttpod@gmail.com. You can Twitter us at BloatedNemesis and at Green_Weird, which is W-Y-R-D. You can Facebook group, Tell Me What to Think, and go to www.stoneduckmedia.com. To check out all of the old episodes. How are you doing, Charles?
Good. Trying to stay dry in this crazy weather that's going overhead now.
Let's talk quick about the floods. So last week we were recording a day after the floods, right? That occurred last week, Monday, I think.
Yeah.
And, like, there was still water in my basement from that.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, our basement drains fairly well, but there was, you know, like a lot of water in here, you know, as it was raining. It went away fairly quick afterward. Every single window in my basement, water was coming in, including like a waterfall, a couple of them. And it's just through like little cracks in the wood because they're wooden windows, frames. Anyway, I mean, my alderman, who's I know personally, was involved in saving a couple people, but one person also died.
That's pretty messed up.
Yeah, about a mile north from here, in between the two showers, but some
flooding.
Yeah, a car pulled into like a park on accident, and they just happened to be riding around right after the first rain finished. Sounds pretty dramatic. And you know, he's like, I'm not a hero. And it's like, yeah, you're a hero. You and your wife, like,
sorry, buddy.
You guys, they had to guess, like, save one woman by the hair.
Jesus.
Like from the onslaught. And this is in Madison. For those who do not live in Wisconsin or know Madison, there's not really rivers here. Like we have two lakes and there's a lot of like land that either is wetlands or should be wetlands. But generally, we handle the rain pretty well here, beyond occasionally there'll be a shower downtown that floods up like a spot below a bridge or, you know, something like that. It takes the water pretty well here, because lakes, you know, lakes handle water well, right?
Yeah, Mendota and Monona can just raise their level notionally a few feet.
Yeah, because think how much water it takes, like, to raise it a foot.
Right.
Like, that's a lot of water in the surrounding areas. And we had that much water that day. And over the following week since then, downtown has been flooding here in Madison on the Isthmus because so much of this water from the watershed is going into Lake Mendota, which then they have to, like, release it into Lake Monona, or Lake Mendota's going to flood too much now. And then, like, the river in between is flooding because the dam and the fucking locks can't even handle it.
Wow. The town of Black Earth is still basically cut off except for one road, because Highway 60's, like, almost all the bridges are out there.
Yeah,
and last weekend.
Yeah, Black Earth is the epicenter of that storm that just sat on my side of town, on the east side of Madison. It barely did anything. We have some friends that live over there, and they're like, yeah, we got some rain. But over on west side, and then, yeah, further west and northwest to this little town of Black Earth, it crushed them there. It crushed them hard. And then ever since then, now, too, last night in western Wisconsin, eastern Minnesota, they got like a foot of rain.
Mm-hmm.
Flooding out there. I guess it's flooding in northern Wisconsin, like Green Bay or something.
Jeez.
And then it was storming somewhere around us tonight, because we got a little rain, but it already stopped.
Yeah, it's storming here down in Beloit.
Okay.
We're probably going to get more later.
So, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean flooding, but you have to think... You
know, everything around here is at flooding, like Turtle Creek, Rock River, everything's high.
Okay, it is, yeah. I mean, because a lot of this is going to end up in the Mississippi, too. I don't know if it's enough in total for, like, I don't know, like St. Louis to have issues or something, but... I don't know. Like, it's been so much in so many areas that flow into, eventually, the Mississippi. So I don't know. I don't know if that's something that people down there are worried about. I'm not sure.
Well, but more locally, we should be worried about it. Like, people like Governor Scott Walker and hopeful potential Governor Tony Evers should talk about how Wisconsin needs to, you know, ameliorate the effects of climate change as they're appearing here. Because, you know, everywhere is different.
So, you talked about this a couple weeks ago on the podcast, how the costs are going to be, instead of on international organizations or on nations, they're going to be on states, cities, villages, neighborhoods, individuals.
Right, like your flooded basement.
Yeah, yeah, luckily we got, didn't hit anything important. But yeah, but they said there's $100 million in damages in the city of Madison.
Wow.
Or maybe it's Dane County, but either way, in
so that's bound to affect GDP.
That's a lot of money. I mean, some of that, maybe there'll be like some federal funds. I haven't heard anything about that.
Insurance,
but
maybe.
Wouldn't surprise me. Yep, there's going to be insurance claims. There's city.
You guys have flooding insurance? It doesn't even seem like you're in a floodplain.
No, I don't know. I don't know. But luckily, we don't keep anything much down here, but.
But people. I mean, at least one person, as you know, lost their lives.
Yeah,
I mean, how much is an individual life worth?
Exactly, exactly. and that's just rains here. You know, it's fires and droughts out in California. It's, you know, hurricanes in the southeast.
Or Puerto Rico.
Well, yeah, Puerto Rico, obviously, last year. You know, and these... On some level, too, I mean... The federal, when we're talking about like those costs being pushed down, but there is still going to be costs for the nations. You know, the U.S. government is still forking over money in one form or another after these things, these instances. But is seemingly unwilling to put money into preventative care,
which seems. Like putting the cart before the horse.
It seems, yeah, it's like, you know, if this was
a national opioid epidemic, they'd move mountains to solve it. Wait.
Speaking of unfortunate events, in one way or another, John McCain passed away this past weekend, and there's been 8 billion hot takes on social media, in the political media sphere.
So what's the point of tweeting at a dead man's Twitter account? That's the one that I just get... Twisted over.
That's interesting. I think it's just... okay, so I mean, there is ways where you can like look through all of the ads of someone else, I believe. So like, if people wanted to see all of the John McCain references on Twitter, so then if you're like... It's not so much so that account can see it, it's so that other accounts can see it, I think. But Yeah, I guess I don't really know. Yeah, I don't know. I probably did it without even thinking about it. Just because you get so used to it, you know.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail your thoughts on John McCain, but I just noticed that.
That's fine. Anyway, I mean, there was a lot of discuss. Like, I was on a Reddit thread. It got really disgusting. Some of it on Twitter. I mean, but then there was like also the opposite, which is just like deifying, you know, John McCain, where it's like so many praiseworthy things. And I don't know, I guess personally, I just think the humane thing to do in situations like this is either keep your mouth shut or praise the person. I just think that's what you do. Like, if your neighbor died, you don't go talking shit about your neighbor to the other neighbors, you know, people in your block, like, right after the person died.
It's one of those times where if you have nothing good to say, just say nothing. Respect the dead, at least.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think, though, because it's a public political figure and politics is so divided that people kind of have, like, an opportunistic thing going on where they're like, okay, and it could be, like, the really, like, trashy sort of trolly type things, like spouting misinformation about his military career or something like that. But it could also be like, let's say you're a liberal and, you know, I mean, because for all of his sort of like maverick centrist things, he was very conservative through most of his career. And I could see being like liberal and using it as an opportunity to like be like, oh, but he voted against, I don't know, like the Dream Act or something like that.
Well, he voted in favor of every war that came across his desk.
Yeah. He did help bring peace with Vietnam.
He advocated bombing Cambodia like days after he was released from being a prisoner of war.
Okay, but even he still helped bring peace and normal relations with Vietnam in the 80s, with John Kerry.
Yeah, well, and that was one of the times, like, everything he did that was bipartisan, like McCain-Feingold bill, like normalization with Vietnam, brilliant fucking great things. But everything he did by himself, or where he was just going along with his party, that he shouldn't be absolved from that responsibility.
No.
Well, to the history books. Obviously, I have nothing bad to say about him, because I'm choosing to say nothing.
Yeah, I kind of think that's... that's something I was saying to some friends over the weekend, which was, like, if people want to write in, like, their history books, like, we should have history be correct, you know? We should not pull punches because someone passed away. I mean, what kind of history book pulls punches on dead people? Like, that's, if anything, you're harsher on them in a history book.
Literally what they're there for.
Yeah, exactly. And so... you know, that's totally fine. I just think it's like, can we just have like, I don't know, 48 hours to a week of respect? That's it. That's all I think is necessary or appropriate. I think anything more, and you know, I mean, not to even get into the stupid president and all of his childishness, that's ridiculous. And I don't even like to give it, you know, more words, but I don't know. Anyway, I wanted to just talk about like my history with, like, as a, you know, nobody viewing McCain. Because he has been, like, he's one of those senators that people who don't know senators' names knew. Even before he ran for president.
Oh, yeah. He was... even back in, been pretty famous among senators.
Yeah. Back in, like, the 90s, even before he ran in 2000, he was very well known, and for some good reason. So, I first remember McCain... in the 90s, back when I started, like, just started watching, like, The Daily Show when Jon Stewart first came on, you know, like, McCain was kind of viewed as someone who would work in a bipartisan fashion. He did, like, McCain-Feingold. He had apparently a very close... Feingold, who's former Wisconsin, very liberal, very anti-war senator, Russ Feingold, is going to be a pallbearer at his funeral.
That's good news.
Yeah, that's, and they apparently, I watched this speech over the past week about when Feingold had to leave the Senate because he lost his re-election bid against Ron Johnson. McCain gave this speech that was talking about Feingold the way people have been talking about McCain the past 3 days. Like, there'll never be one like him. I will work with all of my being to be half the civil servant he was, you know, stuff like that. Like, that's how McCain talked about Feingold. And he's like, yeah, we disagreed on most things. He's like, we disagreed on war, but they still went to war zones together. I don't know. To me, that just means something. Like, he can go there with this guy who's, like, you know, the only vote against the Patriot Act. And he can work with him on even go to a war zone with him, something he completely disagrees with the guy on. Or he can work on an unrelated issue that they can find common ground on.
Like campaign finance.
Yeah, like campaign finance. I think McCain... There's a good chance... I wasn't old enough to vote in the year 2000. And I'm not saying it would have been the wise vote, but I can see if he would have beaten... Well, I could see if I would have voting for him in the primary over W. And maybe even if he had won, vote for McCain over Gore in the primary. I don't think that's the most ridiculous for the way John McCain was then. I think after he lost that election, that primary, McCain made hard overtures to the right, particularly the religious cultural right. And Jon Stewart on The Daily Show would actually call McCain out on those things quite often. Go and give speeches at Bob Jones, shit like that. But W's campaign, Karl Rove fucked over McCain. It's well known.
Yeah, it's cities and terrible.
Yeah, over, like, yeah, race-baiting bullshit in South Carolina, as the legend goes. And I think that changed McCain some. I mean, he wasn't perfect before that by any means. You know, you bring up, like, McCain was never against a war, and you're correct. And I think that's a fair way of putting it. I've seen some people, though, try and put it, like, almost call them McCain's wars.
That seems a stretch. I mean, he's always been an influential voice on the Armed Services Committee and in some way complicit, but to say they were McCain's wars is...
Yeah.
Like, marginalizing Cheney's rule. I'm sorry, Darth Cheney's rule.
And the president himself, W, right?
I mean, oh, sure. I mean, ultimately, it's his responsibility.
Yeah. I mean, that to me, that's really crazy. Though I'm sure he had a strong advocate in the Senate. However, can't you also see if McCain had won the 2000 election and the 9/11 just still happened the way it happened, us not going to war in Iraq?
There's no fucking way we would have gone to war in Iraq.
As much as
I bet he would have even done fucking Afghanistan slightly more competently and finished it properly.
I agree. I mean, so as much as he was a supporter of this arguably the worst decision in modern American history, like, politically, that's the Iraq War, even though he was a strong supporter of it and always wanted to keep it going, right, I kind of have trouble picturing that he would have done that had he been president. And, you know, and then we move into this... Go ahead.
Our containment strategy in Iraq was working up to that point. They had the weapons inspectors in Iraq up to, like, nearly the day before the invasion. There's no reason on any level for any other.
Yep. So, anyway, and then, like, I think it's enough people nowadays remember the 2008 election. There were some highs for McCain. There were some Sarah Palin-shaped lows. You know, and he just was up against, an unbeatable force in Obama.
Sure.
And I don't really think that McCain would have been a good president at that stage in his career. I think he was too politically calculating to the point where he, like, calculated his way into the huge mistake of Sarah Palin.
Right, and calculated his views into, like, breaking poor Jon Stewart's... innocence about politicians on live net, or not live, but national TV.
Yeah, I feel like Jon Stewart was less partisan up until, like, and then when he saw McCain like, obviously gear up politically for the 2008 election, he realized that, man, if he couldn't trust McCain anymore to try and be independent, like, what Republicans were, were any of them? Sure, do you remember John McCain, or John Stewart actually even had a little flirtation with Marco Rubio for a while?
I mean, that might have been a good ticket, McCain-Rubio. That might have won 2016.
But no. Yeah, McCain is pretty old. But, I mean, obviously, he wouldn't have lived through it, right? McCain would not have survived the presidency, so then Rubio would be president. Anyway, it's not really important to muse on Rubio. We'll save that for some other day. Anyway, I just kind of like, to me, like, a lot of these hot takes about McCain are stuck in time, and they're like, here's what he was in 99, here's what he was in 2012, and, you know, here's what he was in 1966, here's what he was in, you know, 2017, and I just think those are all, it's like, he's like anyone else, any of us, he's a complicated guy who had different motivations at different times in his life. And he's no saint. I don't think he's any sort of devil. But I think it's okay to be a little sad, and for me personally, to get choked up when I was reading this old, an excerpt from an old Rolling Stone article about him getting shot down in Hanoi, which I'm not even, like, for anyone having been bombing Hanoi necessarily, you know, but I don't know, man. Hearing about those injuries he sustained, that's, like, pretty heart-wrenching. And to hear, and to know our president now talks about...
I prefer heroes that weren't captured.
Like, to talk about that, like, of all the hot takes you're hearing about John McCain, like, in the past few days, you know, about his politics, his history of, with the media, and elections, and... You know, good and bad. Of all of them, though, like, Trump's is by far the worst. Like, not that he said this in the past couple days, but, like, that's, like, the one thing you don't criticize McCain for, right? It's like, you don't criticize him for surviving torture and a prison camp.
Yeah, it's... man.
Like, you could criticize him for joining the military. You can criticize him for... Yeah, maybe the military as a broader institution that he was a part of. For...
Wasn't his father involved in the Gulf of Tonkin?
I don't know about that. I know there have been for a few years now, like, active disinformation campaigns about him in Vietnam.
Oh, it was Jim Morrison.
Okay. But I don't know anything about that. Well, anyway, there's a lot of shitty admirals, I'm sure, in America's history. You know, if his dad did have something to do with that.
Oh yeah, he was commander of the Pacific.
Okay, yeah, and that's why he was about the North Vietnamese offered to release him, because it would be a high profile gesture of goodwill, and McCain refused that, which is. I mean, he's just following the rules. Is that noble to just follow the rules? I don't know. Like, if it's at the detriment of yourself, I don't know. To me, that is. Anyway, that's enough lionizing Republicans. Let's get on to demeaning them. Trump gave a speech, or not even a speech, it was like a little talk at... there were a bunch of, like, prominent evangelicals at the White House, and after the, quote, media left for the day, he had a little talk with them, probably, you know, I don't know, they were, what, over drinks or something?
Sure.
Oh, probably not drinks, right?
right, not drinks.
yeah, who knows. Over the dead corpse of a prostitute or something, whatever evangelicals are into, I don't know, nowadays. Ooh, man, they are mostly white, except Ben Carson, and two people sitting next to Ben Carson. And anyway, he had some quotes in this that just, I don't know, man, this really, like, got to me. This was just happened, what, yesterday? 2 days ago?
Yeah, yesterday.
So I'm reading this from NBC News, Aliza Nadi and Ken Delanian. Ooh, Trump hates that Ken Delanian. I think that guy's had some bad reporting snafus before. So anyways, what'd you think about this?
Like, it seems really weird that that the evangelicals would be bowing down before a guy who's so publicly scandalous and just against everything that they notionally believe in, but at the same time, he's doing everything that they've ever wanted, so he's, yeah, no wonder they're at the throne bending the knee.
Yeah.
And here, literally, in the meeting today, we all got on our knees and prayed for you because we can't imagine the pain.
Oh my God. Okay, so along those lines of, like, who Trump is, and we kind of know him to be, but how they... So I guess he was meeting with a Southern Baptist leader who's, quote, one of his religious allies. And this is Trump's quote. I had the great Robert Jeffress back there. Hello, Robert. Who said about me, he may not be the perfect human being, but he is the greatest leader for Christianity. End quote. Trump said to applause and laughter. He added, hopefully I've proven that to be a fact in terms of the second part, not the first part. Meaning, he hasn't proven he's not perfect in his mind. In Trump's mind, there's debate that he's perfect. That is a logical position to hold.
Okay, yeah, I guess I haven't heard it expressed exactly that way, but it makes sense.
And then he's, of course, hopefully I've proven that I am the greatest leader for Christianity. Jesus Christ.
He's trying to make himself like a unofficial pope for America. He's trying to Henry VIII this.
You know, and speaking of, like, deifying, what is, you know, talking about McCain, like, the kind of, like, deification of him this past week, like, you know, putting him on a pedestal. Like, Trump does that to himself with religious people who are supposed to not ever put a politician on a pedestal like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everyone's human and they like who they like. But, I mean, like, remember, you never hear this nowadays. I mean, honestly, you haven't really heard it much in our lifetimes. But that, you know how, like, JFK was the first Catholic president ever?
Sure.
And I remember being raised Catholic and being like, well, wait, why does that matter? Like,
and I was like, wait, is that really a thing?
Who cares? And the reason is, and this goes back to, like, nativist, like, 19th century thing, is because, in theory, a Catholic puts Rome, the Vatican, the Pope, ahead of any, like, mortal
country.
Yeah, government bodies.
Sure.
I mean, in practice, that's not really a thing.
They take it to the extent that the Jehovah Witnesses do, for instance.
Yeah.
There are Catholic serving members or people serving in the military who are Catholic, so...
Most of the Supreme Court is Catholic now, I think.
Really? That's interesting.
It's like a weird... Yeah, I I'd have to go down the list, but I think it's like... Because Kavanaugh is too, so that's...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's... I think it's like mostly like Catholic and Jewish. It's like a weird... And I remember once hearing a hot take on, like, why Protestants don't serve as judges as often. Like, maybe as, like, a percentage of how many there are. But I don't know. Anyway, in this closed-door meeting, Trump claimed that he again is bringing up his Merry Christmas thing, how you weren't allowed to say Merry Christmas until he started saying Merry Christmas again.
I don't understand that. Anyway, sorry.
Ever since he started doing that, I started to say Happy Holidays.
Yeah, it seems like a good response to that.
I used to say Merry Christmas. I'm not trying to, like, be offensive to, like, people who celebrate Hanukkah or anything, but like I used to just say it because, oh, it's just the way I was raised, and most people I know, you know, even people who aren't religious, you know, they just do Christmas. But now it's like, because he started having that thing where he's like, you couldn't say Merry Christmas anymore. I remember last year at the, or 2 years ago at the store where I worked, you know, big Christmas holidays business. I would say Happy Holidays to everyone. Just as like a my own personal protest against the war on Christmas, the war on the fake war on Christmas. Trump also claimed that the Johnson Amendment, which is the whole thing about religious groups can't stake out, like can't what back specific candidates, right?
Right. For they can't really make it. Yeah. Certainly not endorsing candidates.
Because they are supposed to be... That it, like, protects their tax status. Mm-hmm. And Trump claims that he got rid of the law when he kind of just signed an executive order that gives a slight change to the enforcement of it. Not even interpretation, really.
Yeah, it just makes it the lowest order of enforcement priority.
But he did not change that law. But what I found most interesting in this... was the self canonization is pretty great, but the fear mongering he's doing with these people. Quote, "You're one election away from losing everything that you've got," and said their opponents were violent people who would overturn these gains violently. gets them. That's my first takeaway.
Audience, right? That's all of that, right?
Yeah, yes. He understands exactly the bait they will take. They apparently have no ability to self-criticize, like, critique themselves. They aren't self-aware enough to realize that it is bait in front of them. They are like mindless fish who just see the worm and can't help it. Like,
but again, they're getting everything they want in some respects.
But if that's all it is, because I do think mostly agree with that, that it's like it's a quid pro quo relationship here, right?
Mm-hmm. You support. They're willing to overlook everything that he is, and he's willing to give them everything that he needs.
But why does he have to fear, especially behind closed doors? I mean, maybe he knew this shit would get leaked. But, I don't know, that's a little bit like 5D chess, right? Like, why is he fear-mongering to them? Unless, I mean, do they know that they don't... I don't know, how am I trying to put this? Why can't he just say, hey, if you keep supporting me with everything you have, you'll keep getting what you want. Done. End of discussion. But okay, quote, "The level of hatred, the level of anger is unbelievable. Part of it is because some of the things I've done for you and for me and for my family, but I've done them." I don't even know what that means. "This November 6th election is very much a referendum on not only me, it's a this is the part. It's a referendum on your religion." And then he goes on something about free speech.
That's some weird fear. Yeah, weird fear-mongering.
It's like, I don't know, is it? Like,
it's like coded for those like Christian nativist extremists, you know, they would fight for their version of Christianity.
But I mean, if they lose, I don't know. It seems like he's just kind of taking like the resistance style fear mongering that like the left is he's like, ooh, hey, that stuff's really good. That stuff works. Most important midterm ever. Yeah, we should do that. But the only people who will buy it on my side are the evangelicals.
The only people he really means.
I guess. I mean, most people are that many people even religious? Much less evangelical?
I wonder about that because I don't personally know people who go to church or are that religious, but notionally churches are still filled. They're still making enough in donations to continue existing. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I guess that... I mean, I know I live in, like... I live in...
Atheist
Central. Yeah, an atheist stronghold of secularism and all that. But I mean, even
Madison has churches.
Yeah, I mean, Madison has shit tons of churches, and I guess people go there on Sunday. I don't know. I guess I don't think the people here, though, are terribly conservative. I don't know. So, I mean, that makes me think then, like, how many people that are super religious are even conservative? But apparently the answer is enough. Enough to matter for national elections. Because yeah. That's pretty much what got him the presidency, right?
Yeah, that 8% or so.
Like, that was that move, like, because he was never going to not get the support of, like, kind of like crazy people because he's crazy.
Sure.
Like, you know what I mean? Like the people who like normally don't vote, but they're like, oh, that guy, he was on The Apprentice. He says it like it is. And like, they don't know anything else about politics or anything. Like he was always going to get those people because that's just who he is. But he didn't have to pivot towards evangelicals.
No.
Seeing as how he's not evangelical in any way.
He went Bush's route because, you know, it's what got Bush elected president. He was a business candidate, and then he, you know, tacked hard, not necessarily right, but along the religious axis.
But wasn't Bush pretty religious, or is that just, I just bought into that?
I believe he was very religious, considering what he would, I mean, maybe because he was in the program, and they hammer religion, but I don't know, I can't see that guy being fervently religious. Unless he's just genuinely repenting for all the terrible things he did.
If he's not really religious, I might have to reevaluate my interpretation of Bush a little bit. Because I have never once questioned that he wasn't actually super religious. I've just always, that's just always been part of who W was to me.
I mean, his father wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think of his father as, now that you're saying that. You know, but I thought that's part of it. He wasn't raised it, he was born again. That's what I feel like I'm spouting like propaganda that they use, that Karl Rove made up. Now that you're saying this,
it's embedded in there and it just comes out automatically like a recording.
That's what I thought the whole thing was, is that he, you know, he grew up rich and like, you know, how he did. And then sometime in college, you know, and after he got into like, I don't know, booze or maybe drugs. And then he got his life clean. He met Laura and he became a born again because his family was like one of those kinds of denominations that I don't know anything about.
Presbyterian? No.
Maybe Southern Baptist or. Doesn't matter.
Alright, I am Bill Shine, new White House communications leader. Alright, I have to figure out how to make Trump come off better in the news, right? That's my job, yeah. Alright, well, here's to a bright new day. Alright, so how do I do this? How about I Google Trump news, right? Because news, Trump, he's the boss, Trump. All right. Okay, I see some stories. They're kind of bad. There's a Fox News one. Ripping on CNN. That's good. That's what we want. Oh, wait. Oh boy. Oh, this isn't good. Does the rest of the White House know? Do they know what's on this platform? What people put on this Google? Oh, boy. It's full of all of these vile truths. Oh. How could they say all of these horribly truthful things? How am I going to break the news to him on this one? Oh, boy. Oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Okay, okay, wait, wait. Here we go, here we go. Okay. I was at Fox News for years, right? Okay. There, we would change the news to make it seem better about the president, about Trump, or worse about Obama. Oh, yeah, what we used to do with Obama. The good old days. All right, focus, focus, Bill. Focus, Bill. So maybe Google is putting only bad stories on about Trump. Oh, that's it. That's it. That's what we did. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, based on my expert opinion, it's not that the White House has a problem with too much truth getting out into the world. It's that people believe that truth. That's why Bill Shine makes the big bucks. Yeah. Fuck CNN too. Right? Am I right? Alright. Gotta get my stuff together and write up a little memo here for the president. Oh, wait, he doesn't read. What am I doing? Alright, never mind.
In the past couple weeks, Elizabeth Warren introduced Accountable Capitalism, the Accountable Capitalism Act. Man, didn't the Democrats learn ACA isn't the most best messaging acronym? And then there's another one. What is it called? End Corruption in Washington. Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the first one, Accountable Capitalism, attempts to rework primarily large corporations.
Right. Especially those over $1 billion or more in revenue.
And the way I understand it is that $1 billion point is a little bit just arbitrary. Yeah. Just like a round number. So, you know, and like, I just want to say off the bat, neither one of these are going to be voted into law anytime soon.
No, so it's like just Elizabeth Warren firing off two, like, single-shot, sawed-off shotguns into the air in the Senate chamber.
Yeah, we can discuss maybe later, like, if there are political impacts of these, what those are, but and what the goal and messaging points are. But let's just talk about these proposals for what they say, and then, but maybe those types of details, you know, aren't that important right now. Maybe in the end, if it were to become law someday, it might be $5 billion or $100 million, you know?
Or modulated based on inflation. Or
that's what I was thinking.
Job count.
That was the first thing I was thinking. Like, $1 billion someday is not going to be very much, right?
Right? You can't even take a hostage for $1 billion in someone serious.
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be, like, an ever-changing number. Otherwise, it doesn't really actually make much sense. Anyway, so this one, the kind of main goal is two parts. One is kind of the way to change the way is a way to change how corporations are organized, primarily like publicly traded corporations, and the kind of trying to influence the decision making of the boards, the shareholding boards. Would that be
a
good summary?
It mandates how who they consider corporate stakeholders.
Yes.
It, like, now it's currently, you know, shareholders, and that's about it. But under an expanded definition of stakeholders that, like a benefit corporation model that is mentioned in her press release, they have to consider everybody who basically interacts with that business on any level, going from customers to just the community that they operate in.
Yep. And supposedly, you know, this is kind of before our time, but that's kind of how things were done.
Yeah, before the magical time of the 80s.
Yeah, the logic behind it that was that I heard was, if you were a company in Madison, Wisconsin, let's say, back in the 60s, companies didn't move around as much, right? It wasn't, they weren't as internationally, they didn't have as many like international or across the country interests.
No, because there were too many trade barriers, especially overseas.
And so you would want to be a good part of your community because right. you're stuck there in some ways. And the people who work with your company probably want to, like, they probably, for example, wouldn't want to move because that's just where they live.
Right.
And so it's trying to kind of, like, force companies back into that mentality by having 40% of their board be elected by the corporation's employees. They have to obtain a federal charter as a United States corporation through the newly formed Office of United States Corporations in the Department of Commerce. This is based off of, both of those two things are based off of models that already exist in the world. You know, like some of this done with employees voting on people on the board is like done in Europe. Some of the
really strong labor protections in Europe. I think in Germany, their unions are mandated to have board seats.
Yep. So then there's also getting into like how people get awarded like shares, like equity in the company, and when they can sell it. And it's trying to get them to think more long term about the company rather than short term making like you know making them bills right away.
Right. Instead of just flipping your stock as soon as you you're legally allowed to, like when you leave your CEO position and get vested for millions of shares.
It also has something in here about state attorney general. Attorneys general would be given authority to petition this newly created Office of United States Corporations to revoke the corporation's charters if they repeatedly, you know, are breaking law.
And that's really the biggest shot across the bow, but ultimately not the most meaningless, because that would require enforcement.
Yeah, no, you can clearly see, in that one alone, you're like, okay, so, like, we already have people who can charge these companies.
Holy cow, she did have a second shot in that thing.
I would just want to connect, because this last one will be how it sort of connects with her other piece of legislation. And that's 75% of the directors and shareholders, the stakeholders, have to approve of any political expenditures. So it kind of forces it to be a broad, like if you're going to do it, you have to have a broader consensus. I think the idea being we're not trying to restrict free speech, because you kind of probably can't get away with that nowadays. But the courts would not allow you to get away with it, I would say. But it would not have it be like as insidious, you know, top 1% type insidious, I think.
Yeah, except most of the people, like the people who own like whole companies by virtue of their stock presence are the people who would just be in favor of getting these kind of political expenditures and are knowledgeable enough to appoint their own directors to the board. So that seems like the most toothless of the enforcement mechanisms that she offers, I think, in some ways. Because it's just going to encourage, like, legal finagling around it.
Hmm. Even if you had 40% of the board as elected by the employees, though?
Hmm. Yeah, and that's what makes it interesting, because, you know, again, enforcement.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
How would you, if... And through amendments, we could see which of these gets axed, and I bet that one would get axed pretty quickly.
Hmm. You know what? One thing I was thinking about, because like, I was talking about this with my partner, and I was just reading through some of this and listening and reading some about it, you know, like people like nitpicking points about it. And not that you or I shouldn't do that, but it's just kind of interesting to me that, like, well, yeah, like, all laws are going to have challenges to so many aspects of them, whether through other laws, through federalism, through the courts, through executive fucking vetoes, or, you know, whatever it is, how the agencies enforce the laws, interpret them. You know, like, there's so many things that change laws from their initial, and not even counting, yeah, and then also the lawmaking process itself between introduction and passing.
A lot of things can happen in committee.
Yeah, and good things could. Right. Often bad things. But I think part of the idea is that it could be refined to, yeah, hopefully they're kind of like, I always think of the old commercials, like, at BASF, we don't make the things you buy, we make them better. And I always think that, you know, that's like what a lot of the political process is supposed to do, is how can we, like, iron out these holes in the law to prevent any of that? And good lawmakers know how to do that. And I think I would call Elizabeth Warren, I mean, shit, the fact that the, like, CFPB, I mean, it's called something different now, and it has a director who doesn't use it, but, like, it's still there. Like, they are just getting rid of it right now. I don't know. And as soon as, like, there's a different guy in office, or lady, you know, it could be back to doing what it's supposed to do. You know, enforcement is always going to be a problem, depending on who you elect. Like, like, it's hard not to be. I mean, there's some aspects of the government that are a little more independent.
Sure. And the other problem, which, you know, is mostly modulated by prosecutorial discretion, but having somebody like Warren on who would try to do as much enforcement as possible leads to a problem of, you know, some people are going to slip through the cracks entirely unintentionally, but it will happen because there's only so many hours in the day to chase down these evildoers.
Yeah, funding. Just, yeah. And, all right, so the other bill is the End Corruption in Washington. This one I started, like, I was really kind of captivated by some of the aspects of this law. Like, a lot of it's, like, my, like, it's like, if I ever got into politics, I would be like that Mike McCabe who was running unsuccessfully for governor, which is a big reason why I would never get into politics. But, like, to me, it's, like, the one thing most people, like, normal people agree on is, they're all a bunch of crooks. I don't trust any of them. It's like, whenever you get into an argument with someone who disagrees with you politically, like, that's where you guys find common ground.
Like, well, yes, they are crooks, but... Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you might disagree on, like, what you do with your crook, or which crook you want, but, like, you kind of all, like, there's a distrust amongst it. And maybe it's because of the nature of, like, popular election, I don't know. But I find it interesting that she's actually trying to take on the swamp in a way, when a big reason Trump was elected was because of that same notion. But he hasn't done anything about it. And in fact, corruption was probably might be his Achilles heel.
Yeah, I mean, drain the swamp. He appointed this, well, not even swamp creatures. They were, like, specifically chosen apex predators from their respective swamps.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's just, like, I just think he's, like, trying to rebrand the swamp. It's not a swamp, it's a marsh, you know? Like, something.
It's my new golf course.
Yeah, it's like, okay, it's a swamp, and it always has been, and now you're just living in the swamp, Mr. President. Okay, so some of the aspects of this law. It's trying to stop, and I like this, although there's probably going to be problems with all of these, but members of Congress, cabinet secretaries, federal judges, and other senior government officials from owning and trading individual stock.
That would be great.
Yeah. And also trying to prevent them from, like, lifetime bans on congressmen, presidents, and cabinet officials from being lobbyists.
That would also be great. That's exactly what those people need.
That one was like, that should be a no-brainer. Like, that one right there. And I get why there's some issues with it, which we'll talk about in a second. It also just...
speech issues, but Dude, find a better use for your life.
There's also creates an office of public advocate to advocate for the public interest in the rulemaking process of government agencies. And it's trying to prevent corporations from having more of a say in a government agency than, people, right?
Right, because their public comments are so much better prepared than any individual could possibly provide.
Yeah, and imagine how if this office existed, how that the net neutrality thing would have gone differently. Maybe not in the end, a different result, but we don't. It was just such a marred process.
The process and the people involved.
Yeah, it's I'm saying process, emphasis on cess, as in cesspool. There's some more about judicial integrity, trying to uphold a government ethics rules for federal judges, which I find a little interesting. Including, I like this, live streaming audio of a federal appellate court proceedings.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Talking about some great listening.
Yeah, yeah. You could just put that on the background. Oh, it'd be so soothing.
You'd probably wake up an hour later.
Yeah. <when it stops. laughs> Yeah. A lot of in here about disclosing financial and tax information, including presidents would have to do it while they're president and up 6 years or something like that before. A lot of federal open records laws involving contractors. I mean, a lot of this is really sensical, practical stuff that would probably pull well. And
the transparency thing alone, again, the second shot in the sawed-off shotgun, that alone should be come across as a bill, because I don't see why anybody who has anything to do with the federal government, why they would be opposed to more transparency in federal government operations. Hell, even contractors should be arguing for this in some level. Not that I would necessarily advocate for their interests, but this might be something that every American could agree on.
It does. Some of these things feel that way. Okay, so let's talk about because I still don't know how to wrap my head around this. Because to me, the most possibly effective, I don't even know if I want to say that. What would be the most contentious? What has probably a lot of public support behind it, and yet we rarely see action taken about is lobbying. Influence peddling. It's what everyone thinks of when they think of the swamp, when they think of what's wrong with government, is this guy having corporate money behind him. They're throwing it at politicians. The politicians are getting rich off it and doing votes that aren't in the public interest. That's what we think of, right?
Right. Look what happened to Rand Paul.
That might be just the episode title. Just look what happened to Rand Paul. However, there's the idealistic view of lobbying, which is, a bunch of people, just nurses, right? Just nurses don't own hospitals. They're just nurses. And they have a nurse lobby that can help give them workplace protections or whatever.
Advocate for public health improvements or...
For
Medicaid... tweaks that keep donut holes from keeping people from accessing their medication.
Yes. And those people, in your ideal lobbying world, groups like that should have a say. And it's brought up in, what was that? I think it was a Reason article by Christian Britschke. I hate journalism names. Anyway, and they bring up how, Reason is kind of a libertarian outfit, so they're against most regulation. The logic being, which is a valid point, that the big corporations who notionally were against, right, or were worried about, especially with this type of law, are more able to leapfrog or subvert these hurdles, or just comply legally.
Or invent ways of complying.
Yeah, well, that's where I take it. But like they take it like, oh, they'll just pay for the lawyers to fill out the paperwork. But,
which is what that is, inventing ways around just paying for the lawyers.
Okay, yeah, yeah. But there's, you know, like, I don't know. And then they sort of paint a picture of, well, the little guy will have a harder time talking to politicians. So I don't know. What do you take?
For one, I don't necessarily agree with that because it's limited to people who are actual lobbyists who are paid more than $3,000 to make contact with a government official. And if you're just advocating for your cause and like phone banking and like hitting every Senate office that you can call before your fingers just run out of blood, I mean, that seems fine to me.
However, I think this law, if unchanged, would expand the definition of a lobbyist to include many more people.
Right, but again, it's like that's the bar. If you're paid like $3,000, because right now they're using every number of legal means to like avoid the target numbers or being labeled a lobbyist.
Okay,
and that's weird. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm going to bet it's more than $3,000 now.
Okay. I see. I kind of take it like, okay, so like in this Reason article, which I think I liked the Reason article because it wasn't just like irrationally against it.
Right, it wasn't that Nation article against your capitalism bill.
There was a Nation article then? You mean National Review?
Or no, oh, National Review, sorry.
I was like, there's a big difference there. So they're painting this picture of like, oh, but if you did this, the little guy won't have a chance. But isn't that the world we're living in? And that's what we're trying to solve. And maybe this won't solve that, but I find it hard to believe it would make it worse.
Right. And isn't this kind of a logical fallacy? It's like a weird straw man, like they're just propping up a little guy who doesn't really exist.
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of like, do you ever see the movie Lincoln? I still think these actually were like supposed to be sort of donors, but in at one point, I think early in the movie, there's like two like folk from Missouri in there, and they've come to petition the president, like, you know, and they just like get a meeting with the president, and they're like talking about some local thing, and it's like that's not how it works today,
unfortunately.
Like, I have a problem with, I don't know, what do I even have a problem with? I don't know, but I can't necessarily, like, I don't think I can get a meeting with Ron Johnson, like, just show up at his office and, or even plan a meeting.
He's not even going to take that call.
Trust me, I've tried. I've actually tried that one, the phone call. I can't even talk to a live person in Ron Johnson's office.
Nope, neither have I.
I can't even get voicemail most of the time. When I'm calling up, it says, like, voicemail box full.
Wow.
Yeah, well, maybe I just called at bad times. But anyway,
you just leaves it filled so it can't take it.
Yeah. That's what I think, yeah. So I don't really put a lot of faith in critiques like this. Yeah, as you're saying, it's kind of like a weird straw man. It's like they're protecting this little guy that doesn't exist, which I do agree there should be room for that little guy, even if they don't exist. But
right, and that would be the public advocate position, notionally.
Yes, yeah. And also, but that this person isn't proposing anything, nor do I hear a proposal for... Like, it kind of reminds me, I think we talked about it, of that, that kind of, like, neoliberal... critique of socialism a few weeks back that was like, oh, but socialism could hurt minority groups, and and it's like they had a logical valid argument, but I don't put much faith in it because, one, the picture they're painting is the existing picture even without socialism, and well, actually that's just the main reason. I don't know if there's a second part to that. But it's like, I don't know. I don't think this lobbying, I think any way you can go after lobbying,
I mean, I guess I would be worried about, like, small time, like, niche public interest lobbying, that where they don't necessarily have as much money to spend on lobbyists, where they might bump into that $3,000 minimum. And judging from the records requirements, I'm going to bet that the cost of any kind of service, even at that level, is going to go up pretty drastically.
Okay, if you put the heel down on the money behind all of this, I mean, especially if you can get into PACs, right, and super PACs and
501Cs,
which this does not address, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, there's a big loop. I mean, to me, that's actually the biggest hole in this political corruption thing. I think all of her things make sense here, but it's kind of
nibbling around the edges.
Yeah, it's kind of ignoring the inherent thing about political corruption, which is the elections. Money. Or how we fund
the money.
Yeah, the funding of elections, the drive to be reelected at any cost, and then trying to raise the money to pay that cost. And I think this is sort of missing out on that. But anyway, if you were to put the heel on the money, like, I don't have a problem with some group that is representing it's like a pro-pollution group, right? They're like, we love pollution. And back in the day, we used to spend millions of dollars on politicians to get them to vote pro-pollution. But now we can't spend that money because of all of these rules. I don't have a problem with them just going and having a meeting with the politicians and trying to, or, you know, the assistants and whoever.
Right.
Like, they should be able to do that like anyone else. Like, They shouldn't be able to spend money to get better access.
Right.
But I don't think they should. I think anyone should be able to create lobbying groups and lobby for their positions. And I don't know exactly how you regulate who gets meetings, because, you know, senators and their staff only have so much time in the day. But well, and then the group, the law does create, like, corporate lobbyists and then non-corporate lobbyists.
Which is an interesting distinction.
Which I think is part of addressing that, although you can easily see, like, we're not a corporate lobbyist, we're just a pro-pollution lobbyist, you know? It's like, okay.
We're a public issue lobbying group.
Yeah, we just want more pollution. We don't care if corporations want that too. We just happen to have our interests ally with them.
We, the property owners of Wyoming, believe that global warming is good because our property values will skyrocket.
Oh, except the skiing areas. They probably won't, will they?
I mean, they're already... Yeah, that's another episode.
Okay. Anything more you want to say about these laws? I highly suggest you can go on her, you know, like...
Warren.senate.gov,
yeah.
In the newsroom, her recent press releases. She gave pretty lengthy speeches about this, like one pointing out that the trust in the government has gone from like 72% to like 18, or 73 to 18,
Jesus.
Between 1958 to now.
Mm.
After Watergate, it was down to 36%.
Okay, that's pretty stark. Because Watergate's often pointed to as like,
that's
this moment
point.
When people lost faith. But yeah. if we're only... If that's still not twice as good as today.
Strap in, everybody.
All right.
Do you want to talk about the timing of this at all or no?
Oh, yeah. Let's just quick talk. Yeah, the political... So,
she's up for re-election, and she is poised to run for president in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is her way of establishing some pretty clear... guideposts for progressive legislation in the next couple of years, if God willing that happens.
Yeah, I think also you often hear this critique specifically about the Democrats in this upcoming midterm, but kind of in general about Democrats the past generation. It's like beyond like Obama in and of himself, there's been like this kind of lack of like what do Democrats stand for? I was just hearing one of my dad say this the other day when I was talking about stuff. He's like, what are they for? I'm like, I mean, it's like I could tell you, but I'm trying to be in a listening mood right now. But I think there's a point to that. If that many people don't know, and it's not just conservatives who are willfully ignorant, it's, you know, there's people out there who don't really know what they stand for. I think this is her attempt to define that. Whereas the party leadership, of which I don't think she is not doing a good job of that. All the consultants, right? You know, that we've talked about on the show.
So much, they're still bankrupting the DNC.
And this is, I think, her staff's attempt at, like, because she could, pardon me, she could just as easily, I mean, is she in a competitive re-election bid?
I can't imagine. It's Massachusetts. This is her staff's attempt to not have a career in Washington after they leave her service.
Yeah, I suppose. To me, this is a setup. It's to help the broader party right now. And it's to, I think you're right, it's to give guideposts to what it means to be progressive in the next 2 years, whether or not this stuff gets passed. And then I think it's to set up a presidential bid. Because I think it's saying, because you can just picture her in 6 months, right? Announcing her presidency, she's given a couple speeches in Iowa, and she talks about corruption. She talks about corporate corruption. And how the corporations don't care for you, and they're going to leave your town, and your senator here is, you know, not pointing out a specific senator, but yeah, saying, and they're being paid by those corporations. They're not going to keep that company here. And
they have no interest.
And she's going to say, I proposed the blah 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 and the blah blah blah, the Accountable Capitalism Act,
among others. I mean, she could just say CFPB, and that would get, like, you know, the 73% view that is favorable.
Yeah, but that's 10 years old now. It's already done. I mean, this is something that she has proposed that has not been passed, that she as president will pass. I will vote for this. Or not. I will sign this.
And that could be a progressive wave if people, like, actually yes. have guideposts to vote for.
Yes. I think that's really important. I think it's something important now, but it's more important even beyond the presidential election for the legislative kind of where the party is turning. Because right, it's really easy to say they're always going left or they're going establishment or whatever, but when there are, like, clear things that people can say, but I like that one.
Like, let's have some real litmus tests.
Yes, yes.
How do you feel about war, climate change, Warren's transparency, Warren's capitalism?
By the way, he did this early on, so it's a slightly different thing, but I would say Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All is the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Cory Booker did the same kind of thing with his federal legalization.
Yes, correct. I think those four bits of legislation, and there, you know, might be a couple other floating out there that we're not thinking of right now, are clear. They're trying to affect the platform of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
By telling the voters, hey, look at this that I'm doing. You all like this, right? Right?
And I will point out now one interesting dark horse candidate who's kind of confounding that typical narrative is Jeff Merkley, who, from my estimation, actually stands a pretty decent chance of walking into the Democratic primary vote.
Why are you saying?
Because he's been most fervently against the family separation policy.
Oh, sure.
Like, he was the guy who he was the first one to show up at that place, the detention facility in Texas, and had the police called on him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that alone, like, people are looking for examples in this day and age. Like, just like this guy, the guideposts that are these bills, they will also be looking for people who have done individual acts of, you know, goodness and beneficence, mm-hmm. and things that we want to be, mm-hmm. as Americans.
And I think part of getting this out now is, like, well, again, shortly before the midterms, is to kind of, like, define the party for the midterm, which I think is kind of problematic for them right now, I think. But it's like they all are their own guideposts, and I think they're all kind of, like, defining them. It's like, so Merkley, you know, made that stand about that thing, right? About children at the border, and that was popular. People actually are like, yeah, that's good. And so the other candidates all kind of can see that that is a popular, winnable, and moral and ethical position. And I think Bernie's Medicare for All is maybe a little bit more politically contentious, but is similar. And I think these things from Warren are also, I think it's all falling in the set. But Cory Booker's legalization. Like, if they can actually see that, oh, hey, people like this stuff, like, let's not worry about, like, you know, like, the mythical, like, red state swing voter.
They don't exist. Just drive people to the polls. That's all you have to do to win. Sorry, people. I don't know how to explain it better. He has the second lowest Trump score for reference, though.
Merkley?
Mm-hmm.
Really? And who was Lois? We talked about this a few weeks ago.
Kristen Gillibrand.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's she's just like...
Lois before Bernie Sanders. And Cory Booker round out the list of top five.
I think Gillibrand is just like...
She's another dark horse.
I don't even know if she's a dark horse at this point.
She doesn't necessarily have as much recognition.
I think she's obtaining it. I think she's...
How about Tammy Baldwin?
Hey, Tammy's my girl. Lady. That's offensive, sorry. Tammy's my, Tammy is like, I think I was saying this to our group chat the other day, that Tammy to me is like the, she solves the problem of discourse and norms and civility while still having good credentials on most policy things. She also comes from a red state. Though she's in a very tough race, and I don't know, I wouldn't put like a lot of money on her winning, but presumably she's going to win this year. So if she can win in a Trump state while Trump is president as a fairly liberal Democrat, and she is kind of known for her ability to be bipartisan, to be civil, to be able to talk to all types of people while being like this longtime LGBT crusader. I don't know. I think she has a lot going for her. I think actually just plain old ambition and like, cause like she solves the problem of civility that so many people talk about, but like, is that a problem? Is that a solution that wins a presidential election? I have my doubts. I think charisma probably wins presidential elections.
Yeah. Ugh.
Like, whether it's disgusting or like
great as she is,
or kind of like Obama, like heroic, some sort of like pull them in charisma, which Hillary, I'll say this about Hillary. She got about as far as a politician can get lacking charisma like that. That just shows like good and bad. Everything behind the scenes that got her to where she was. Because she did not have natural charisma. She never did. And she's not like a cretin. But no one's ever like laughed at her. Been like, oh dude, Hillary's like hilarious. It's always like, you know, she's not as unfunny as they say.
That's your defense?
that's how people talk about it. Like, you know, it's like... She's not as bad as you think, mm-hmm. and like, but you know, people. That's not the way they talk about other politicians who've won presidency. I mean, shit. Even take like W. Like W had kind of had he had that. You know, he just like had a like uniqueness to him. You know, and he beat Gore.
The typical staid politician.
I don't know. I mean, like I don't know. I guess. Bush's dad wasn't super charismatic, but I don't know. Was Dukakis? I don't think so. I mean, Reagan was like a movie star. Now he obviously had charisma. Nixon, I guess, might have been one of the last ones that didn't have much charisma.
I bet he was really charismatic person to person. I mean, Hunter S. Thompson found ways to talk to him.
I mean, but also he was running against you know, like, at least in 72, like, McGovern. McGovern was, I think, had very interesting policies, both today and then, but I've heard bad things about him, kind of personality. He was, like, came off really unlikable. Hmm. So
that doesn't surprise me.
I mean, unfortunately, you know, there's all this high-minded political science-type rhetoric about, oh, what wins in these states and what is, you know.
And they're spending millions of dollars on it every month trying to figure it out.
Yeah, and it might just... By the way, though, I think Warren, I think she's pretty charismatic.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed... I remember like, her being on The Daily Show before she was even a politician?
Mm-hmm.
Before she was actually even with doing the CFPB, she was just this like expert that would come on The Daily Show, and I used to love her appearances. I'm like, this lady knows what she's talking about. Man, she's good. Okay.
Wait. What are we talking about? Closing thoughts? Do we have a list?
Let's do a weekly. We're getting weekly because it's gearing up towards a re-election for Scott Walker. Scott Walker news. So, he held a ribbon-cutting ceremony at the Zoo Interchange, which is an important interstate interchange in Milwaukee, or maybe just outside city limits.
Yeah, it's like just west of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
It basically forms the most western point of the ring that goes around the metropolitan area.
Yep.
The main ring.
And so this has been... I mean, it's sort of funny here. Like, in this story, which is from Fox 6 News, which I think is not exactly trying to go out of its way to attack Walker. It talks about how it actually has not come down. So anyways, Walker said it came in on time and under budget, or at least at cost. I don't know if he said under budget. At cost. So it hasn't.
Tell me he had a band.
I don't see any bands in the picture or video here. There is, it's to the backdrop of a parking lot behind him, so that's fun. I've been driving on it while it's been kind of under construction these past couple of years, and it's been a nightmare, but it's been churning along. But it's kind of notoriously like they pushed money into this to get this funded and finished while they're like not doing other things across the state,
like Highway 41, for instance, that goes north of,
or specifically, which is almost, it's kind of like part of it, which is the north. 41 heads to the north from this interchange, and they have not yet finished that. So it's like, there's a big portion of this not done.
Well, I mean, some of it is finished out to, like, what is that, Washington County? Or Ozaukee? One of the two.
Of 41 itself?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but I think it's not this section of it, right?
No, no.
Because like, there's going to be, like, unused lanes or something they're talking about. Because 41's not... So, like, they finished part of it really nice, and then these other, extensions have not been finished. So, they're, like, there's, like, going to be, like, somehow lanes not used up, I guess, is part of this.
You can see that in Chicago sometimes, but that's just room for future development there.
Yeah,
service vehicles.
I don't think, in this case, that's what it was. It wasn't a planned thing. Walker was pushing back at his, you know, because he used this
as another cheap political stunt.
Yep, he's using this for another free political rally. So he gave a stump speech essentially about transportation funding, and he's pushing back because here in Wisconsin, people have been taking to call them potholes, Scott holes. Because our roads, we've talked about the roads on the show. And
earlier in this episode.
Yeah. And so he's like saying, oh, but how are the Democrats going to pay for fixing all these roads?
Raise the gas tax.
They're going to probably raise the gas tax. Evers has denied he's going to raise the gas tax.
What? So, what? Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever. His choice.
Well, I take that back. Walker said they're going to raise it by $1 per gallon.
Holy cow.
And Evers has denied that charge.
Okay. Like 10 cents a gallon might be warranted.
Yeah, I think, yeah. But I like how Scott like went for the big number, the like noticeable round third digit, you know?
Like just reflexive hyperbole.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting, actually, in this article, they were taking a lot of quotes from Mandela Barnes, who's the lieutenant governor, who has kind of pointed out how he, well, before the primary election, how he was, like, getting sort of, like, overlooked, even though he ended up winning. and rightfully so. It was, like, weird articles, like, forgetting he existed, you know?
Like, yeah, attribute, like, numerous newspapers on their, like, list of the people up for election, like, just didn't include him.
Yep.
Some probably racist reason, we can say that, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It seems racist on its face, so.
Yeah, it does. And it's, I don't know, maybe every year some lieutenant governor candidates get forgotten? Like, I guess that's possible, but we haven't noticed it before.
Well, why would you forget that one and include people way, way further down the ballot?
Yeah, was anyone else forgotten by any newspapers this year?
Yeah, that's the real
if the thing. Answer is no, then yeah, something's kind of suspicious. Anyway, so so this is kind of funny, and it's not totally finished, and it wasn't done totally on budget. And it's become a debacle that's affected the entire state.
Yep. Like, hitting it at a, like, chi point, and just fucks up the rest of the state.
But Walker is he's a tough politician, and he is turning his shit into gold.
And right, like all those free Foxconn campaign rallies.
He is good at this sort of thing.
Did you see any of the coverage of Terry Goh giving the UW-Madison $100 million?
The chancellor of UW-Madison is going to be on NPR with the guy who hosts Larry Mueller this week. I'm hoping to try and listen to that, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how she answers that.
Can you tell the people kind of just the
top? He got a standing ovation.
From who?
That guy got a standing ovation from the assembled alumni and dignitaries who were there to watch him, I guess, hand over the metaphorical check and another free fucking Walker rally. It seemed to be in the Van Hise meeting room, if I'm right.
And so, wait, Walker was there?
Yeah, of course he was.
Yeah, of course. Interesting. So Terry Goh is the American CEO face. Oh, he's the CEO or the...
I'm pretty sure he's the CEO of the whole company.
I thought he was just like head of American operations or something. Might be right.
Yeah, he's founder and chairman of Foxconn, because this is their tortilla right now.
Wow. Okay, so, and they gave, it was like a couple $100 million to you, UW, at least?
It was exactly $100 million.
Okay. Oh, okay. Again, hitting that extra digit just to
drive it doesn't the point really, home. It's like the kickback for when, you know, you give a mobster a lot of money for extortion. He like kicks a little bit back to like, you know, education to make sure the kids don't end up fucked up.
Oh, so okay, let's lay that out. I'll lay it out really. So, Walker cuts funding to UW. Walker at some point uses, sort of indirectly, but uses savings from other government industries. Or government agencies that he's cut and departments and to give a bunch of money to a large corporation, right? And then that corporation makes Walker seem not as bad for the first thing by throwing some money at UW.
Yeah, the very organization that he withdrew money or held money back from, basically. But notice it isn't the entire UW system. It's pointedly and politically UW-Madison.
Why? Okay, well, explain that to me.
Well, it's a weird... I mean, we even have it in Wisconsin notionally to some extent. Like, there's a cultural difference from attending UW-Madison than attending any other UW system campus.
No, there totally is.
And, like, in some ways, Terry Goh and Scott Walker are exploiting that. Because if you can separate the educated people based on where they went to school, like, then you can all of a sudden turn potentially, you know, people who went to the UW-Madison who might not show up to vote. Because, oh, Scott Walker isn't a total giant fucking raging prick.
Yeah,
If that's the one piece of news they hear, then they're going to eat it like fish to bait.
Why can't you give money to the other schools to get just to drum up enthusiasm from those alumni groups?
I mean, why wouldn't he give money to UW Parkside? Because no cameras would have shown up at UW Parkside.
So I think, okay, I think I see what you're saying. Because if you look at, so if I'm thinking about, okay, if I'm thinking about this purely politically, right? Mm-hmm. Walker is probably right now as popular as ever in Racine and Kenosha. That's my guess.
Yeah.
And he already has his base in Fox Valley, Waukesha. It's a few other rural areas that don't have many people. He's trying to, not that all of the UW-Madison alumni are by any means in Madison, but still, it's...
They probably vote not for him.
Yeah, I'm saying they either live here and don't vote for him, or a lot of them are going to live elsewhere. I mean, there's going to be some that live elsewhere that vote for him, but... So he's trying to, yeah, kind of like, not so much drum up support where he's already popular, because that won't bring as much return on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to diminish enthusiasm in an enemy camp.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Belching fire.
Yeah. Man, that seems like a risky move, though.
It really is. It's some incredible levels.
He has such a bad association with UW-Madison, though, that... Like, if I'm trying to think of anything positive about him relating to UW-Madison, until this happened, I literally can think of nothing.
Nothing positive. I mean, how much money does he always cut? Fucked over UW so much.
There's so many bad things I can think of, and I can't think of anything. I can't even think of him, like, giving a speech on campus. Like, really? The governor who's in the city can't give a speech on campus? I can't even think. It might have happened.
I guess on some level that's good, because he hasn't... Maybe he has, and I haven't noticed, but he didn't really politicize or try to go after that, you know, political speech on campus, free speech, conservative talking point. Or I guess he didn't really bite at it as publicly as other people did.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I wonder why. Seems like he would.
Well, because Madison, who can't, like, that's, like, basically the third rail of Wisconsin politics. There's higher education by extension.
Yeah. You know what I didn't say, but this is kind of related to that, in the flood discussion, in the first week thoughts, was...
Sorry, it's flooding here.
Oh, is that really thunder? Holy shit.
Yeah.
the ominous music begins for what I'm about to say. There weren't any big events, as far as I saw, or big things about Walker, like, helping... Madison. I'm sure he said something about it. But, like, I saw Tony... I mean, just on, like, local news or something, I saw Tony Evers out helping, like, people in Monona sandbag. I mean, is it mostly meaningless photo op? I don't know. Maybe.
Holy cow. I'd love to see Scott Walker do manual labor.
But, I mean, dude...
And that's, like, second only to seeing his bald spot.
When I went to... Like, to get to... So I went to go see the lock and dam that were flooding with the kids last week. Mm-hmm. And to get there, there's two ways, right? You come from the east or the west, essentially. And you drive right near where the governor's mansion is. Like, it's really close. Like, he could have walked there.
Made a photo op.
Instead, he probably was like, okay, do they have a helipad? All right, I'm out.
Mm-hmm. Can I land my plane there?
Yeah. Sir... There's no airstrip. Also, it's flooded. That's why you'd be going.
I think he's really out of step, and it's hurting him.
That really surprised me, because that reminds me... I was hearing a criticism of, like, Trump responding to McCain, and it's like Trump's just, like, bad at doing his job. Like you might not like McCain, but it's just your job to go out there and be like, yeah, he was a great American, yada, yada, yada. And it just seems like Walker, like, your job... As someone running for governor, and there is flooding a mile from your house, is to go help with the capital of the state that is underwater.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you live. It's the capital of the state. It's where the seat of government, for fucking sake, is. It's like, dude, if anything, I would expect, if he was a normal politician, he just hates Madison. If he was a normal politician, we should be sitting here saying he really took advantage of it. He went over the top. God, they plastered the airwaves with commercials of him helping the flood victims here.
That would be huge, right? They would never stop playing it.
He was throwing Madison all of these undeserved platitudes. I mean, if he did do something, I didn't see or hear anything of it. They didn't try and push it. Instead, they're getting stuff about, giving money to the university, which I heard about that multiple times in the past couple days. And, the zoo interchange thing is making the rounds in the past 2 days. And, God, it's like right by your house. And you had a week, because the flooding was like all week. It's like, wasn't just like, oh, you know, I couldn't get there yesterday, and that was the only time it happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's still
going. And now six more counties Scott Walker's declared a disaster in.
Well, I have a feeling this flooding thing is going to be like...
hopefully a big thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of almost feel like it's... like, I don't know, politicians don't talk about flooding very often, but, I mean, I do think there's, like, a lot of important ways this ties in with infrastructure, with environmentalism, with climate change, DNR, wetlands, right? I mean, it wasn't a big deal, but, like, they were getting rid of wetlands for this Foxconn. It wasn't, like, a lot of wetlands, but it was there. And
yeah, we talked with Fabi about it. It wasn't super impactful. They were doing things to ameliorate their impact.
But it was there. And that's, like, something that, like, Scott Walker has made easier to do to, like, build Walmarts across the state and shit. And things like that's what caught, like, if you ever remember, like, all the flooding in Houston? Like, that was one of the things about it, is that, like, Houston was just for, like...
burning concrete.
Yeah, it was just for as long as you could go down what is a, like, semi-dry, it's like a little river there, but it's like this, like, it was like a floodplain. That's, like, most of the suburbs were, like, built into this, or, like, kind of as the city expanded, built into, like, this floodplain as it heads towards the ocean. And it's just all cement. And there's nothing that can absorb. I mean, granted, that was, like, 5 feet of water in a couple days. But, you know, and now, you know, and that's, you see that in far too many places in this country. And to me, a responsible politician would have been at least... addressing it or talking about how, hey, I don't prevent my environmental agency from addressing it.
Right? I don't try to do some Orwellian things and remove climate change from, like, websites or something.
Oh, God, yeah. I've heard that's been happening in Ontario or something recently. It's like the Ontario provincial government. Which is, like, surprised. The reason I noticed it, because I'm like, really? In Canada they deal with that shit, too?
They have to. Everywhere is being affected.
No, I mean, I'm sorry. The government and employees or agencies or whatever being ordered to not use the words climate change.
Oh, okay, yeah. That does surprise me, too. But Ontario is kind of conservative. They elected that Ford guy.
Yeah, well, they have a different Ford now.
Yeah, his brother?
Yeah, I think it's his brother. Hmm. Presumably not a crack-smoking politician?
I mean, it doesn't hurt careers, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, from what I hear from Canada, when the little bit of Canadian news I get into, or I see on social media or whatever, is that they really hate this Ford guy, too. Like, he's a conservative asshole who tries all types of conservative asshole things.
That makes sense.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about North Korea. You want to give us an update on...
Trump is, I guess, today the Department of Defense lifted their suspension on large military exercises in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of puts the kibosh on... that was, like, one of the prerequisites that the Koreans insisted, or North Koreans insisted on when they were... negotiating for disarmament. But so there's two different tracks here that aren't that are easily conflated in a very short news cycle.
On one hand, the South Koreans are very aggressively moving towards ending the Korean War, like, totally and legitimately and legally, which, given the U.S.'s separate track of disarmament and how well that hasn't gone, that the peace track could be impacted. Because the U.S. is part of the war, so they notionally have to be signatory to any kind of armistice or peace deal. And so hopefully we won't be getting left behind by everybody else in the region agreeing to it, and us, yeah, in a different place diplomatically. This coincides with the, apparently there's some huge humanitarian problems in North Korea because of the new banking restrictions. Humanitarian groups, well, banking restrictions and the ban on American citizens going there. A lot of places aren't sending money or workers there anymore in the past year. Like, humanitarian aid has gone down to like $17 million from hundreds of millions of dollars before.
Wow.
Yeah, and combined with drought and other exacerbated effects on their economy, which prevent good agricultural crops, which, you know, fertilizer and the things that people need and that the government would try to notionally be able to buy. Yeah, it's not going to go well for the North Korean people. I mean, I just hope the South Korean president accomplish. He wants peace, like, before the end of the year, as ambitious as that is.
Yeah, that's, yeah. But yeah, but maybe Trump's a big wrench in the process. And, you know, then speaking of war games, Russia announced some huge war games. Like, they haven't had this big of ones, like, in my lifetime.
Right, they've sent about a dozen surface vessels and submarines to the Eastern Mediterranean as in a military exercise, another show of force. Hopefully it's just saber-rattling, but
Said it would have its northern fleet and its eastern fleet.
Mm-hmm.
Where does their northern fleet operate out of? It's not in the, like...
No, it operates out of Vladivostok in the Arctic Sea.
Okay.
North Atlantic.
But they don't... But you can't year-round traverse, like, their entire northern coast.
No.
So it's kind of like a northeastern...
Mm-hmm.
Like Alaska. Okay. Anyway, that included like all airborne troops and.
Yeah, it was huge. It's a show of force because Bashar is about to crush the last enclave of rebel resistance.
Possibly with chemical weapons.
Probably.
John Bolton says, at least.
Yeah, and the United States notionally would respond with military force to that, but if the Russians are there over. You know, so in the region, it might give Bolton and Trump pause on responding with military forces they have before, which would be kind of a telling indication in and of itself.
Yeah. It seems like there's no reason for Russia not to do this. Like, there might be responsible reasons not to do it, but there aren't irresponsible reasons not to do it. Like, they're trying, like, they kind of have, like, that foreign policy of, like, big and bold and full of bluster and you know, acting tough and seeming large and in charge. And so, and domestically, too. Like, that's what politically appeals there, at least enough to keep them, keep that government in power.
Sure. So, yeah, it could be a domestic thing, but I don't know. I don't know how long the nationalistic military expedition will continue to reap political benefits for Putin. I mean, on one level, his military police, who are kind of serving as de facto law enforcement in parts of Syria, are apparently really well regarded by people on the ground.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
especially
good.
The Chechens. They are being super forthright and honest.
I have a question about war games. So they're having these war games in like Central and Eastern
Mediterranean.
No, the war games.
Yeah.
No.
Are you sure? Let me see that speech.
Did I read that wrong? I'm pretty sure.
I thought it said. Where is the other
letter? No, they traversed the Bosphorus to go into the Mediterranean itself.
No, so. You're talking about the fleets they sent down to Syria. Yeah. I'm talking about the war games with China and Mongolia.
Oh, that's, a whole other animal.
Yeah, so we're kind of conflating two things here. So they're sending things down to, fleets out of the Black Sea down to Syria with, like, cruise missiles and shit to support Assad. But what I was originally thought you were talking about was the war games that are happening, like, in Siberia with China and Mongolia.
Mm-hmm.
And are going to involve the northern and eastern fleets. And, like, it said all airborne troops and, like, thousands of tanks. And it's, like, their biggest war game since 1981.
Wow, that's huge. And that it's happening in Siberia is kind of telling.
Well, okay, so that's what I'm asking. Like, why would they hold it there?
Because
they're not going to get attacked from there, right?
Well, they're opening it as a new theater of operations. They're like, we can operate here, so you have to consider this.
Because, like, global warming? Or just because...
Yeah, because now their northern fleet is able to traverse the Arctic almost all year round, right?
I don't know if it's almost all year. I assumed it still wasn't, but it was some of the year.
Yeah, well, way more of the year than it used to be, at
sure,
least.
Sure, yeah. So, okay, that's what that tells you, because that's what I was going for, is like, why hold it there? Because to me, so, publicly, Russia is saying, we're doing this because of big buildups of NATO troops in Eastern Europe. That's what, like, they said, publicly, sure. Was their reason.
Mm-hmm.
But why don't they just hold the war games in Western Russia, then?
Well, that's way more of a threat. Like, that's like walking in and putting down your pistol before negotiating.
But if
they hold it in Eastern Russia, they can, you know, be seen to be doing that, but not actually threatening the Europeans. Because the thing about war games is that it's only a slight fraction away from being an actual military
maneuver. Yeah.
And to do it in the East means that is also sending a signal to Europe, potentially, that the Chinese and Russian military might move in tandem on some other issue, potentially.
Well, that's clearly being... I mean, that's, to me, clearly being said.
Yeah.
Which is... That's why they're participating. It didn't say they're participating with necessarily much, but it did say they were participating. Supposedly, you know, it was brought up in the article, Japan is kind of being a little...
circumspect about it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Russia and Japan still have, shall we say, territorial issues.
Yeah. Do you think it has anything to do, not necessarily in response, because these things get planned for months, I assume.
Years
in
advance.
But do you think there's anything to do with North Korea? Is it sending any sort of message about, I mean, they're not doing it with North Korea, of course, but.
Maybe. I mean, that does send a response, right?
I mean, if you're saying that doing it in Europe would be, like, way too much threat to the Eastern European countries, then doing it in the East must at least be acknowledged to be
Are they threatening North bit. Korea?
Well, or America on the Korean Peninsula, is what I was thinking. Yeah. I mean, even though that doesn't go right to Russia, it's within striking distance. Is there a mountain chain or something between...
There's like 50 miles of border between North Korea and Russia.
What's that geography like there once you get into China?
North Korea is mountainous. Like, there's a Yellow River,
China?
And China's also pretty mountainous.
Up there? Okay.
Yeah.
See, it wouldn't be quick to send an army through Korea into Russia.
No, they've got that... Well, Russia, I know, has their train tracks that they maintain to Pyongyang.
Oh, okay.
That so Kim Jong-un could and his father could go on a train to Moscow, but...
So there's transportation, then.
Yeah, and okay. China, of course, has the high-speed rail between Beijing mm-hmm. and all points in the country almost at this point.
Hmm. Okay. That's interesting.
That's one thing about modern infrastructure is that they could use those high-speed trains to redeploy, like, whole divisions in, like, days compared to the weeks that it would probably take the American logistics chain.
Yeah. What's going on in Yemen?
There continue to be bombings in Hodeidah. where the, I guess, the U.S.-led coalition, I would call them the Saudi coalition, but at some point we have to admit American complicity in their operations.
Hey, there's a downside to being a world leader.
Yeah, right? So yeah, they're continuing to bomb Hodeidah. I think, what was it, they hit a hospital earlier this week, and they hit Sana'a's International Airport earlier today. It's there continued to be civilian casualties. The war hasn't stopped. Nobody's really reporting on it, so I feel the need to mention it on the show, and perhaps we'll mention it every week until it's something happens.
Oh, I am fine for that. I'm down with that. What was the... Okay, so we talked about here, we talked about abroad. Well, that's everything I had for today. Any, like, last-minute things you've seen on the news that we should get in so we don't seem terribly out of step?
Well, let me double-check the news right quick, make sure there's nothing out of sync.
You know, like, did Paris just blow up or anything?
Andrew Gillum becomes the first African-American nominee for Florida governor. Another Bernie-supported candidate.
Interesting.
In his primary.
Jerry
Brown signs a bill eliminating money bail in California, so that's huge.
I just saw something. Their assembly passed some sort of clean energy bill there, too.
So, the good things are happening.
Wow.
And Venezuela's continuing to fall apart.
Yeah, that's... That seems to be moving slower than I would have guessed if you would have told me that 2 years ago or a year ago.
Hmm.
Is that, like maybe their government doesn't, like, have a great plan for success, but they know how to slow the inevitable, or...
Yeah, and once you're on the scale of desperation, like, incremental levels of movements in desperation don't seem that obvious to people outside.
Okay, yeah. That's a good way of putting it, yeah.
But hundreds of thousands of people have already left the country, and more are leaving, so it's obviously not good by that measurement.
You want to just say a quick word on the Mexico-America auto parts NAFTA-related news? Kind of give...
Trump is, you know, renegotiating NAFTA like he always promised he would, and his premier... item seems to be a auto. I'm sorry, a automotive tariff negotiation between the United States and Mexico, whereby like 45 to 55% of the car has to be made in a place that gets that has a more than $16 an hour minimum wage. So I guess that's interesting and good, and it has to be made in the. NAFTA area, which apparently, according to the Bloomberg article that I read, only three major car types or models, like not even major models, but even come close to falling under this. Because a lot of the stuff is already made in pretty compliant conditions because, you know, the nature of international business. Like, Canada wants to join in and they're just going to be able to, like, walk in and sign it because they already meet, for instance, the wage restrictions and other requirements. And it's terrible. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with what he was negotiating for, but having negotiated this proves that he's an incompetent negotiator. Anything he wants.
There you go.
He can use, like, a tool. And perhaps realizes it? Yes, realizes it on some level, right? You get that, right?
I think he... I don't know. Well, that has been Tell Me What to Think. This has been Closing Thoughts. Email us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. Hit me up at Bloated Nemesis on the Twitter. Hit Charles up at green_weird, which is WYRD. Find the Tell Me What to Think Facebook page to like and follow. And go to stoneduckmedia.com to see all of our old episodes. Let us know if you had any thoughts, particularly on those Warren bills. I would love to hear that. And have a good week, Charles.
Have a good week, Pete. Stay dry. It looks like there's more rain in the forecast.
It's like been lightning here this whole time, too, as I hear your thunder. So. All right. Have a good one.
Some days it's sunny. Some days it rains. Destroy the myth and it will break our chains. Break your chains!